that we've got all your records. We know them by heart.
You have
I
the
think
family
the
album?
drunk driving one was my favorite one.
Yeah, I worked hard on that. Bob Newhart and I wrote
Six
that together.
He speaks very highly of you.
Bob?
Yes.
Yeah. He calls me on an imaginary phone every once in a while.
Hello, Bill. We did, as I mentioned to you, see your show. It really was great.
Oh, thanks. The Bijou is a great place to work. It's tight. It's convenient for comedy.
Well, where are you from? Are you from around here?
No, I'm from Long Island.
You're from Long Island.
Yeah. Live in L.A. now. But when I first started, the Bijou was like one of the first clubs I ever played. And I love coming back, and because it's close. People are close to you. You can touch them, you know. Big halls, you sort of lose that.
Have you,
informal
do you play mostly big clubs?
Lately, I've been playing bigger places, yeah. Stuff doing comedy. Would you stop dancing and listen? It's tough to outshout Lou Rawls records. But I've been playing little bigger places, little different kind of places. This tour has been a strange stretching of material and thoughts. It started with Vegas, which I'd never done before, and I wanted to, and that was okay. And
they always make her look so large on television.
Yeah, they inflate her shoulders.
Yeah, I think they do.
And then from there, I went to another sort of traditional kind of room in Michigan, Flint. No, Dearborn. It's been a long trip. Dearborn, Michigan. Then here, and then a lot of college one night is mixed in between, and then so it's been a very interesting melding of places to play.
Is this the first tour where you've really been headlining?
Yeah.
What are the differences?
Well, you know, it's like when I used to open, I would never get any billing, you know, until I started to mean something a little bit, then they would put it on. Otherwise, they put your name at the bottom of the sign and look like you made the sign, you know. And you wouldn't get any billing, and that would be hard because the audience would have timed their drugs for the headliner. You know, that was always nice, and yelling stuff at you and yelling names of songs that they wanted to hear. They had requests. That was hard. And it just the recognition factor. When you walk out, I don't have to fight for the first 10 minutes and go, hey, is this on? You know, I don't have to do that.
Speaking of that kind of situation and working in a tight club and people shouting things out, there was a most enthusiastic crowd at the Bijou last night.
Mm-hmm.
But was it a problem for you? There were a couple of people in the upper decks that were relentless with you, shouting out things for a while. I mean, you had a dialogue going, and you know, resorting to the
which
right,
one?
I remember when I had my first beer kind of thing.
You remember lines.
I went alone, right?
Yeah.
Is that a problem to you when people get a little crazy?
Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. I handle them real well, you know, and I sometimes can mingle them into the material and go back to them and go away from them and go back to them. And unfortunately, it's a... there's nothing that can prepare you for that, you know. I mean, there's no Heckler 101 course in college to take, you know. They mean well. Usually they're a little, they have problems themselves, you know. I think if someone did a psychological study of the heckler, you know, and why he speaks when you're speaking, you'd find out that he's probably sexually deprived or just immature or drunk or showing off. I mean, it, you know, there's something there that makes, he's jealous, that makes him want to be up there with it, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a problem in that sometimes it comes right on a punchline, or it comes in a soft piece, or it comes at just when you don't want it, when it breaks your rhythm. I mean, last night, I don't remember which show it was. I was in the middle, the second show. I was in the middle of this improvisational sequence where I was just gone for about, I don't know where I was, for about 10 minutes, just going off, and I was ended up doing something about dog acts, you know, those, and I had to go home and write it down because I liked it, you know. It was those little dogs wearing bow ties going out on a date, and the lame host who gives them, you know, little things to eat, and the dog won't go, and you know, the guy ends up pulling a gun on him. I got into this whole thing, and I had my piano player was playing a Satin Doll, you know. Sparky's going out on a date. Look at Sparky, he's out on a date. You know, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm in the middle, and I was really enjoying the freedom, you know. And in the middle of it, some guy just says, what happened to Jody on the last show? I mean, you go out with her or what? In the middle of the thing. And you have to stop and then talk to this, you know, this guy. And you don't know what he's doing or, you know. It's a problem, but sometimes it's okay, you know.
And my usual reaction is, I'm so embarrassed, you know, for these people. What is he going to think of Philadelphia, you know? We're a bunch of assholes. He'll never come back again, you know.
You can edit, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're a fucking pain in the ass.
I was wondering how much improvisation you do in the course of a night.
Depends. The second show last night, I must have done 30 minutes, easily a half hour of just, a lot of it was just reprimanding. A lot of it was scolding. It depends on how free I get. I don't remember the first show too well, how much, I think I stayed pretty close to the facts in the first show.
I think
a couple of moments.
I probably wouldn't be one who would even know. I guess you know a little bit, but I don't. I guess you have to see a lot of comedy and maybe even be a part of it before you realize that someone's straying from...
Yeah, I don't... I don't even know what I'm doing it half the time, you know? I mean, you can't let them know, because when you let them know, hey, this is something new, they get nervous, so they won't laugh, you know? If you make it look like it's just happening, you know, and it is just happening, then they go crazy, you know? And the thing to do, to be able to do, is to make your old stuff look like it's just happening. That's what I try hardest to do, to make it look spontaneous, not like I'm up there to do an act, you know. And
that's
I think I accomplished that.
Sometimes you come up with a line and like, I'll discuss it with him and say, oh, this would be real funny if we did this.
And then when we do it,
we're not getting the kick out of doing it anymore, and it doesn't come off as being very
funny.
Yeah, that's, you know, and it's hard to do that sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back, and I don't want to sound ecology, but it goes back to Stanislavski, you know, it's the illusion of the first time. You can make them think that you just made that up.
Right.
And they go, oh my God. An hour, man. He just made that up. I can't believe it. And the music came in too perfectly. And the lights, they all made it up at the same time, you know. That's what I try to, you know, that spontaneity and that feel.
Speaking of your older stuff, it seemed like last night, and I don't know how much, if this is a new problem for you or not, but I would think that it might be, where you have people who are becoming more and more acquainted with your act, and you
right.
get... The requests.
The request. Isn't it weird?
Oh,
yeah.
I made a statement about it last night. Didn't I in that show? I said, isn't it strange when a man who talks gets requests? I mean, it's like, I mean, it's really nice, you know.
What was it? We saw Steve Martin at a big hall.
Yeah.
He came out, and I knew that he would probably do this bit about cat handcuffs, you know, how his cat is spending all his money and everything. And I was really happy to see him do it, but as soon as he started to go into the bit, somebody yelled out from the audience, I've got my cat handcuffs, and leaned over the balcony with his little, you know, and he just stopped. He just walked back.
Oh, well, you've already heard it.
Oh, well, you've heard that, and, you know, and went on.
See, well, you know, you become a victim of... I write a great deal, and some other people don't, and they rely on that 40 minutes that made them famous, and then they take it out on the road, and they have albums out, where they've done the same stuff repeatedly on television, and they can't understand why people, you know... So I've sensed that starting to happen, you know, they yell out face... Or they'll yell out something else, you know. And it's nice, but yet it's a warning that detour, you know. So I'm real aware of that. I won't let, you know, cat handcuffs happen to me.
I was wondering, when you're writing, you did Face last night. I saw you do the amateur show bit a couple of years ago.
Wow.
I was wondering how much of that is based in truth.
They're all based in truth.
Oh, they were. Especially the kid, the driving with the diapers. He really...
Oh.
You got me with that one because it was perfect.
every moment, every, with the exception of some lines which are a little out there, as you know, those are lines. Every piece is the Ali thing is all fact. Face is word for word just about the way that thing happened. My whole background. I mean, everything I talk about. You know, when talking about say like Face and leading up to the. Family in the recording business. I mean, that's all. Why? Who would make that up to go to an extent of, you know, and I would, and my children and the birth and, you know, the whole thing is, that's the way I've seen it, you know, And I come off, and people say, you know, do you really have children? Like, I would go to great extents to make up two children, one 6 and one 16 months. I can see me, at, you know, in a motel going, should she be 16 months or 12 months? I don't know. A year. That would be a year. I don't know. It'll be funny. 16's funny. Sounds funny. You know? So it's all true stuff. I think that's why people hook into it, you know? And then if you can make that visual picture to them, you know, if they don't remember your thought, if they can see that baby at the drive-in, you go, ooh. That's real, you know? So that's important stuff, I think.
How's your career changed since soap?
It's really, I mean, well, career and life are two different things. Unfortunately, they get too close together sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, boy. Yeah. We could identify with that.
Yeah. But, yeah, and that's two identifications. That's, you know, harder than one.
That makes it worse sometimes. I mean, it makes it better and it makes it worse.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I mean, you can understand, but still you want to forget about it too, and you can't.
Yeah, like who gets more mail? Do you get more mail or do you get more mail?
At the moment, he's feeling like I'm, you know, dominating the show.
Does that bother you?
No, but I was told before we started, we've only been doing the show together a couple of weeks. Before we went on, I was told, be very careful. You're the stronger person. Be careful not to dominate.
Don't be the Peter Lindhays of this team, right?
Right. Now, this one is with the lines all the time, and I'm pretty much shutting up, and I'm looking like I'm getting my, you know.
See, well, it is bothering you. See, it is. It's coming. Right. Listen, our time's up for now. We can discuss this at our next session.
Thank you. That'll be $50.
Yes. Career has changed greatly in that, in one way good and one way bad. Good in that I'm, a well-known commodity now, you know, of some merit. Bad in that it's not really the way I wanted to do it, you know. It's strange. The thing that gives you all the fame, say, you know, and notoriety becomes an albatross in that I gave up doing stand-up for 2 years, and I was not into it that long before I gave it up when the show started, because I didn't want to hassle with a heckler again. I didn't want to have to wait for that second show after doing a good first show. You know, the ups and downs of every day touring and performing. I had a family, I wanted to be home with them more.
It did sound lonely a couple times.
Yeah,
show.
It is.
Wow, I really missed him. I mean, I felt like you really did.
I do.
Not like, you know,
and then,
I'm saying that because it's appealing.
And then show happens, you're offered a role, a strange role, but a tremendously challenging role as an actor. And I said, okay, let's do it. And I believed in the show, you know, always, because I think it's a terrific show. And far different than anything on television that was offered to me. I mean, I was offered the lead in San Pedro Bums. You know, and stuff. They want to put me with a dog and a you know, some little child in a van. Oh, you'll go ahead. You'll tour. You know, and you'll take pictures. You know, thank you. So I took it, and that's what's, you know, it's good and both bad in that people associate you with who you are, and I, you know, there's a sense of a tremendous loss of identity in that. I mean, I've always been me on stage. And I walk down the street and it's, hey, Jody, how you doing? You know, and it's, hey, wait, I'm not, you know. So that is a problem, and that's why I'm not touring again. And that's why I want to do more touring. That's why, it's a scoop, I'd like to leave the show.
All the same, what was your favorite episode? Do you have one to watch or to perform?
Of mine? Yeah. That I like my work in the most?
Yeah.
Broken up into, well, it's two seasons. I'll pick one from each, or a couple from each. I haven't had that much this year, and that's been a bother. This year I was proudest of the scene where Carol left me at the chapel when she didn't show up and we were supposed to get married, and I had to make a speech to the family about why there wouldn't be a wedding that day. That seemed to fit some of the monologues that I do, you know, in my act. That was nice. Otherwise, last year there was a scene that I wrote that I was very proud of, which was a scene. Are you a diehard soaper?
When I can, yeah.
Do you remember the scene where Bob, you know, the dummy, was put, I put him in the refrigerator in the kitchen and tried to talk to Chuck, because
I didn't see that.
You know, Chuck and Bob are ventriloquists, vicious ventriloquist thing, and the dummy is sort of like in magic, and he's a real cutting, sarcastic guy who always puts me down and does fag jokes constantly, you know, and I can't stand him. So the scene opened in the kitchen, and Bob makes an entrance, and then you expect Chuck to be behind him, and I came in holding him, and the place went crazy, and I looked around and put him in the refrigerator. Shut the door, and with a smirk on my face, sat down and sort of cereal, and Chuck came down looking for Bob, and his hand kept going up to work the controls, you know. And I wanted to talk to him because I was getting nasty notes from Bob Campbell, who was the dummy, you know, and they were all of these vicious little notes signed Bob. And I said, Chuck, I think you have a problem. I want to talk to you. And he kept saying, where's Bob? I can't talk without Bob. And I said, listen, why are you sending me these notes? And he goes, Bob's sending you these notes, and I'll talk to him about it. So we went on and on and on. I said, listen, you need some help. And as I was talking to him, he was cutting a grapefruit, and he picks up the grapefruit, and it's a smile face. And he starts talking with the grapefruit. And I said, it's food, Chuck, it's just food. And I put it on a juicer and turned it, and he went, oh! Which scared me, you know. And then he picked up an English muffin and talked like an English muffin, and I kept eating everything he was picking up to show. It's just food, a banana. He did a Mexican voice, and on and on and on. And then Richard Mulligan, who plays Bert, comes in. My mouth is filled with, I mean, I was like a gerbil, you know. And Mulligan, Bert comes in, who's a very nervous character and screams and sounds like a Japanese science fiction movie, comes in and opens the refrigerator and sees this limp figure staring into space and does this scream that was just out there, you know, and that was the end of the scene. Now, I like that scene a lot. And some of the hospital scenes I did last year with Harold Gould.
That was great.
Those were nice scenes.
Mulligan was tremendous. How much of him is in Bert? Does he stutter?
No.
That was tremendous. I love the way he stutters.
He's a very quiet, cultured, sensitive guy. We become, I think, of everyone, he and I are the closest of friends, you know. We go out together, we travel together, you know, he and our wives and everything. And he's a very quiet kind of guy whose background is all stage. Best known before soap, I think, for playing Custer in Little Big Man.
Right.
Right. I remember from that. I saw him on a game show, I think, once, and I thought he didn't seem like he was very happy doing
oh,
it.
Oh, probably Hollywood Squares.
Yeah,
he hated
right,
that. I remember
right.
he hated, I don't yeah. want him. I'm a stage man. What am I doing here?
Right. I got that feeling from.
How did you like working with Joan Rivers?
Do you have any other questions? No, I'm a hard kid. I kid.
You're right.
Joan has more energy than Con Edison. I mean, she's an incredible, energetic, talented person. We got along well, you know. It's tough being on something that, you know, is not terrific, you know. At the time, you know, everyone had felt excited about it, but yet there were shortcomings, and it was okay. It was an okay experience, you know, to tune into someone's mind who you've seen for years on television, and suddenly you're working close with them, and your ideas of comedy are different than her ideas are, you know, and you prove in many instances to be right about certain things, you know, but she's a tremendous lady who I think will go on to do good movies.
Just didn't happen then.
Well, the first, you know, it's not all her fault. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm dumping on her, but it was shot poorly. That's the cinematographer's doing, you know. And she was nervous, and there were script problems, and it needed rewriting, you know, drastically, and that wasn't done, and I wanted to do certain things and didn't. Everyone was nervous. It was my first, it was her first, and the crew really did not respond tremendously to a female director, which I think was a problem, and that's the crew's problem, you know.
Right.
And I thought that there were some moments in it that are quite funny, you know. As a film, it's not a film, it's more of a sketch, you know. It's an elongated Carol Burnett sketch.
Now that you've had a chance to do, well, the stand-up, a film, and the TV, what is it that you'd like to be involved in all of them, or what is it that you get the most enjoyment out of?
Oh, it's so hard to say. I I would like to do a real interesting half hour, a real good half hour show, television. I think if you can do television right the way Ernie Kovacs did, you could do, I would not like to do it long. I would like to do like a 2-year stint, you know, or a good solid year.
Not a variety show.
Not a variety, but well, some sort of variety, but a mixed, I hate the word, but a mixed bag kind of thing. Basically, the kind of concept that I bring to the stage. You know, bittersweet, funny, wild, bittersweet. You know, that kind of candy shop. You know, all different tastes. I would like to do that, you know. I'd like to do that on PBS. You know, I would, with more freedom. I love directing. I do little films at home. And, you know, little sound, little things. Just for my children, or just with friends, or interviews with weird characters and people. That's where I get a lot of my characters from, just riding around town and observing them. I love watching other people do what I want them to do and seeing my words come alive. I love seeing that without being on stage. I mean, I like, there's a lot less pressure and you know, your ass isn't on the line. But yet it is, but yet he's the guy saying it, you know. But I told him to say it. You get into all these internal arguments, but I like seeing, it's like, you know, it's like painting a picture and then seeing it, you know, and saying, oh, I did a good job. I could shade a little bit more than then being able to, you
it's
know,
like
go back.
It's like you have that
and
pause.
Yeah.
And when you're not the performer anymore, you can think about what you're going to do and take the moment to say, but wait a second, maybe that's not the right thing.
Yeah.
For a moment, instead of the pressure sometimes of coming up with it, on cue all the time makes it impossible to judge what you're doing at the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I came off last night and I knew that first set was a blowout. I mean, I knew it was a great show, you know, because the laughs were like, the decibel level in that room was incredible last night. And I came off feeling great, you know. And then the second crowd was a little more, I don't know, they weren't as exciting. That's the interesting thing about comedy, is that every crowd brings something new, and so you always have to reach them, or, I mean, I never do the same show twice, you know, you can't. I mean, if you do, there's no sense doing it, you're just a mimeo machine.
And then it becomes no fun for you either.
Yeah, so everybody brings in different vibes, everybody, I mean, the room dictates it, you know, the weather dictates it. If it's rainy out, they come in disgruntled, a little ticked off, the corduroy's wet, they're a little upset, you know. And then if it's nice out, they're in a pretty good mood. If, you know, depends.
What would you like to see on television for yourself to watch as a viewer?
What do I like to watch?
Yeah. Because I find it real, I always used to complain. People would always say, well, you know, you're working at night. It must be awful. You don't get to see this. You don't get to see that.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, I don't feel that way, because the times that I got to watch TV at night, I thought it was worse than watching the soaps during the day for the most part.
I love soaps during the day.
Yeah, so
Days of Our Lives.
This one, 12:30 to 2, forget it. It's Ryan's Hope, All My Children.
Days of Our Lives is the
best.
Yeah,
that's Days the best of our one. Lives.
Better than The Guiding Light?
Oh, yeah, I never liked it. It seemed like
I
was going
to
bar mitzvah school.
Night, how bad it was, you know?
There's very little that I really, I mean, I'm not a watcher. I'm a channel switcher constantly, you know. Thank God for remote control. You don't have to get up, you know. But that used to keep me in shape. There's a show on PBS that I watch. I don't know if it's still on, because some towns don't even have a PBS station.
Right.
Academy Leaders, which is it's Monday, I think, and Tuesday in Los Angeles anyway. And it's a collection of 4 short films, Academy-winning or Academy-nominated short subjects. And the short film form is incredible. It's something that intrigues me greatly, to do 20-minute films, 10-minute films. Not just, you know, animation. I'm not, you know, there are some that are, incredible. But short little films. I saw one the other night with Alan Arkin that was done in 1962. Which is with a Spanish character that he first rose to fame with, a little man who plays guitar. And it's a little scene with he and a social worker on a bench in Central Park, done in 62, which is 20 minutes long. It's great. So I watched that. I used to love, I can't even think of the name, and they only made 6 of them. There's another PBS show, John Cleese from Monty Python starred in them, and I, what the heck is a hotel? It's the funniest show I've ever seen on television. And now I can't remember the name of it.
That always happens. I always seem to pick the ones that's not going to last.
Well, that he did, and he only made six, and it's called... Oh, it's his name. Well, it was great. It was great.
We'll pop it in with somebody else's voice when we figure out
yes.
right.
Heights, something Heights, something, I don't know, sounds like. Anyway. So that, and I would watch our show, of course, you know, just to see how the editing and what they cut out of my scenes. That's always a bother when you think you do something good and you don't know what's going on in the booth, mm-hmm. you know. And they cut to someone else, because television editing is incredible. It's all computerized and stuff.
People always think that you go in and just start at the beginning of the show and run all the way through.
A lot of stop and go. Our show is so disjointed. I mean, we do stuff 1 week and it's not used for 2 weeks. Because, you know, it can be dropped in, you know. We do shows sometime we're in four different time zones. I mean, but people don't even realize, you know. We'll go from a day scene to a morning scene to a night scene to a mid-afternoon scene all within a half hour. And you go, wait, where do these people live? Oh, what the heck is the name of that show? Oh, well.
Well.
They were taping last night.
Evening Magazine.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah.
Do you ever tape yourself standing up just to, like, critique, see what you're doing?
I mean, bring a camera to a club or something? No, I tape off the air, you know, when I do a show off the air. It really is a good idea, but sometimes, you know, you don't have enough light in the club to get a good quality. So, and when you put lights on, it sets the audience off, and my main concern is that the audience, you know, have a good time and not be bothered by somebody making a home movie, you know. But I love watching tapes of myself, you know, so I can... Cut and edit. Like I audio tape my shows at the Bijou and listen and make some notes and, you know, edit. It's the only way to get better.
Well, great. Thank you very much.
Okay, I had a great time.
Good luck with your polo playing. I know you do a lot of that.
Yeah, the horse is feeling a little bit better.
Good.
Yeah, he threw a shoe on the Franklin Bridge, as a matter of fact. And I hope you start getting more mail.
Wonder before we turn the tape off if you could
IDs.
A couple of IDs.
Hey, he's been doing it.
Not your first
time. Have you ever done any radio?
Yeah, I was a jock for a while.
Oh, God.
This is WMUL, the voice of Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia. For those of you who are trying to get into spring orientation, tough shit. There is nothing available except ROTC.
Is that where you went to school?
I went there for a year, and then I went to Nassau Community College for two in Long Island. And then I finished at NYU and a degree in television direction and film. Actually, one of my professors was Marty Scorsese, who was a young graduate student then teaching class. What do you see, Red River? Red River, I'm telling you, we're going to watch it nine times this afternoon. Oh, God. He was an intense, he was a great teacher, though. But I still can't remember the name of that show. And it's really, it's an incredibly funny show. If I can remember his character, Tower. Well.
Look, you remember, you write us, you put on a postcard.
You're a lovely couple, and thanks for playing You Bet Your Life. Okay, what do you want me to say?
What do you want to say? I didn't know we were doing anything.
Eric suggested something for the rock and roll party.
Oh, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Eric Packett.
Yeah. It's on tape.
It's
our
boss. I know.
Eric Packett? Is that his name? Stay tuned for the Eric Packett show. He'll be here.
Eric's special guest today.
After the Johnny Stuffit show. I'll do one.
Do one.
Let him do one.
Okay.
Why don't I promo this show?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
Hi, this is Billy Crystal. Stay tuned for the Tripp and Maureen show. I never miss it even when I'm in L.A. I swear it reaches there. Well, maybe not really, but they told me to say that.
Good.
Fine.
Let's leave it at that.
We're going to edit it up and you'll never know what you said.
You are obviously a sports fan.
How'd you get that? Just because I wore a Yankee jacket and two pairs of socks last night? I lost the opener. I'm very depressed. Gidry. Oh, well.
That's what did bad.
You? Yeah.
Everything? Obviously boxing.
Boxing because of Ali and because it's the characters are so interesting. I did a guy, you didn't see the second show, I do with this old fighter who is now a vendor. And he fought too much. And his name is Tony. And it's called Peanuts Popcorn, 25 cents a bag. And I had done 2 hours last night, and I closed with this thing, and it's, he's hawking his stuff, and he talks to this other old friend of his, right? And they were so stunned. I mean, I had worked my buns off. I was so tired that they couldn't even applaud when I walked off. It's one of those, what? Oh my, you know. Because it's so, you know, I love those guys. I love boxing. Baseball players are strange types. I love all the sports, I think. I started to lose my interest in pro basketball. I don't find a game. I find I can turn on the last 3 minutes and see the whole game.
Right.
I guess everybody's losing their interest. They have some real problems.
Yeah, the attendance is down.
Right.
I think they've watered the game down. You know, too many teams. The talent isn't as, is not as. Teams don't have as much talent. You know, there's too many teams. Too many to keep up.
College
with.
Basketball is the only good thing.
I love college basketball.
That was great. I spent a whole weekend.
Yeah, needless to say, we had some excitement around here, given
Penn sure.
Four and everything.
Sure.
Her alma mater.
Right.
Yeah. See, like in NYU, you know, we didn't have football, or we had a good shopping team.